Chapter 92. I don't mind cold. I am not delicate, if I look so. Apostrophe. She quickly moved one of the two rough chairs to the bedside, and sat down. The other as quickly moved a part of some traveling wrapper from herself, and drew it over her, so that her arm, in keeping it about her, rested on her shoulder. You have so much the air of a kind nurse, apostrophe said the lady, smiling on her, that you seem as if you had come to me from home. Apostrophe, I am very glad of it. Apostrophe, I was dreaming of home, when I woke just now. Of my old home, I mean, before I was married. Apostrophe, and before you were so far away from it. Apostrophe, I have been much farther away from it than this. But then I took the best part of it with me, and missed nothing. I felt solitary as I dropped asleep here, and, missing it a little, wandered back to it. Apostrophe, there was a sorrowfully affectionate, and regretful sound in her voice, which made her visitor refrain from looking at her for the moment. It is a curious chance which at last brings us together, under this covering in which you have wrapped me, apostrophe said the visitor after a pause. For do you know, I think I have been looking for you some time. Apostrophe looking for me? Apostrophe apostrophe, I believe I have a little note here, which I was to give to you whenever I found you. This is it. Unless I greatly mistake, it is addressed to you? Is it not? Apostrophe, the lady took it, and said yes, and read it. Her visitor watched her as she did so. It was very short. She flushed a little as she put her lips to her visitor's cheek, and pressed her hand. The dear young friend to whom he presents me, may be a comfort to me at some time, he says. She is truly a comfort to me the first time I see her. Apostrophe, perhaps you don't, apostrophe said the visitor, hesitating, perhaps you don't know my story? Perhaps he never told you my story? Apostrophe, no. Apostrophe, oh no, why should he? I have scarcely the right to tell it myself at present, because I have been entreated not to do so. There is not much in it, but it might account to you for my asking you not to say anything about the letter here. You saw my family with me, perhaps? Some of them, I only say this to you, are a little proud, a little prejudiced. Apostrophe, you shall take it back again, apostrophe said the other, and then my husband is sure not to see it. He might see it, and speak of it, otherwise, by some accident. Will you put it in your bosom again, to be certain? Apostrophe apostrophe, she did so with great care. Her small, slight hand was still upon the letter, when they heard someone in the gallery outside. I promised, apostrophe said the visitor, rising, that I would write to him, after seeing you. I could hardly fail to see you sooner or later, and tell him, if you were well and happy. I had better say you were well and happy. Apostrophe, yes, yes, yes. Say I was very well and very happy, and that I thanked him affectionately, and would never forget him. Apostrophe, I shall see you in the morning. After that we are sure to meet again before very long. Good night. Apostrophe, good night. Thank you, thank you. Good night, my dear. Apostrophe, both of them were hurried and fluttered as they exchanged this parting, and as the visitor came out of the door. She had expected to meet the lady's husband approaching it, but the person in the gallery was not he. It was the traveler who had wiped the wine drops from his mustache with a piece of bread. When he heard the step behind him, he turned round, for he was walking away in the dark. His politeness, which was extreme, would not allow of the young lady's lighting herself downstairs, or going down alone. He took her lamp, held it so as to throw the best light on the stone steps, and followed her all the way to the supper room. She went down, not easily hiding how much she was inclined to shrink and tremble, for the appearance of this traveler was particularly disagreeable to her. She had sat in her quiet corner before supper imagining what he would have been in the scenes and places within her experience, until he inspired her with an aversion that made him little less than terrific. He followed her down with his smiling politeness, followed her in, and resumed his seat in the best place in the hearth. there with the wood fire, which was beginning to burn low, rising, and falling upon him in the dark room, he sat with his legs thrust out to warm, drinking the hot wine down to the lees, with a monstrous shadow imitating him on the wall and ceiling. The tired company had broken up, and all the rest were gone to bed except the young lady's father, who dozed in his chair by the fire. The traveler had been at the pains of going a long way upstairs to his sleeping room to fetch his pocket flask of brandy. He told them so, as he poured its contents into what was left of the wine, and drank with a new relish. "May I ask, sir, if you are on your way to Italy?" The gray-haired gentleman had roused himself, and was preparing to withdraw. He answered in the affirmative. "I also," said the traveler. "I shall hope to have the honor of offering my compliments in fairer scenes, and under softer circumstances, than on this dismal mountain." The gentleman bowed, distantly enough, and said he was obliged to him. "We poor gentlemen, sir," said the traveler, pulling his mustache dry with his hand, for he had dipped it in the wine and brandy, "we poor gentlemen do not travel like princes, but the courtesies and graces of life are precious to us. To your health, sir." "Sir, I thank you." "To the health of your distinguished family of the fair ladies, your daughters." "Sir, I thank you again, I wish you good night. My dear, are our people in attendance?" "They are close by, father." "Permit me." Said the traveler, rising and holding the door open, as the gentleman crossed the room towards it with his arm drawn through his daughter's. "Good repose. To the pleasure of seeing you once more. To tomorrow." As he kissed his hand, with his best manner and his daintiest smile, the young lady drew a little nearer to her father, and passed him with a dread of touching him. "Humph." Said the insinuating traveler, whose manner shrunk, and whose voice dropped, when he was left alone. "If they all go to bed, why I must go. They are in a devil of a hurry. One would think the night would be long enough, in this freezing silence and solitude, if one went to bed 2 hours hence." Throwing back his head and emptying his glass, he cast his eyes upon the traveler's book, which lay on the piano, open, with pens and ink beside it, as if the knight's names had been registered when he was absent. Taking it in his hand, he read these entries. "William Dorrit Esquire, Frederick Dorrit Esquire, Edward Dorrit Esquire, Miss Dorrit, Miss Amy Dorrit, Mrs. General and Suite. From France to Italy. Mr. and Mrs. Henry Gowan. From France to Italy." To which he added, in a small complicated hand, ending with a long lean flourish, not unlike a lasso thrown at all the rest of the names. "Blandois. Paris. From France to Italy." And then, with his nose coming down over his mustache, and his mustache going up and under his nose, repaired to his allotted cell. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.